You're listening to an Aeon podcast.
Welcome everyone to episode 5 of the 7 Steps of Freedom from Anxiety, Depression and ADHD podcast series. We recorded this series over a number of weeks and have been lucky enough to sit with the incredibly knowledgeable Jodi Gozard, formerly Jodi Chapman, who is a well-known naturopath, speaker, author and mentor. Jodi's life passion is helping people find freedom from anxiety, depression and ADHD. This is episode 5 of the series. Jodi and I talked about nutrient deficiencies in this episode and the malabsorption of nutrients in the gut. So to kick us off, can you please humour me and possibly our listeners and explain exactly what malabsorption is?
Yes. So at any time in your life, if your gut wall is inflamed or if you've got any kind of bleeding disorder in the bowel, such as Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis or celiac disease where the villi are damaged, inflammation of the gut wall, bacterial overload that causes that, food intolerance response that causes chronic inflammation in the gut, any of these problems will cause a malabsorption issue. Malabsorption is a little bit different to malnutrition. Malnutrition could come from malabsorption, but malnutrition will also come from not being provided the nutrients from your food, such as from a, you know, highly nutritious diet.
Okay, so what exactly happens to us when we're suffering from malabsorption and are deficient of vital vitamins and minerals? And which vital minerals are we talking about?
Yeah, so we need a broad range, almost, you know, everything that we require in our diet will lead to strength in different organs. For instance, our bones require calcium, they require vitamin D, they require phosphorus and boron and all sorts of nutrients. They also require high levels of our hormone DHEA, which is our anti-aging hormone. And without that, we can also find bone density problems. In terms of our brain and our energy production, if we have a malabsorption issue or malnutrition issue with something like iron, for instance, which is really quite common, and you can have an iron deficiency without being anemic, anemia tends to become a problem once the iron deficiency has affected your blood volume. However, low iron prior to that, iron's responsible for participating in the biochemical pathway of serotonin and dopamine production. So iron deficiency through the dopamine pathway, which dopamine converts to adrenaline, will cause fatigue.
So iron deficiency outside of the, where you mentioned the blood, so they can obviously say you go and have a blood test and they can detect an iron deficiency in your blood. Mm-hmm. But if you're considered on the low side of normal, for example, is that considered a deficiency or is it only when it enters the bloodstream, that marker?
No, actually, I don't look at the amount of iron in the blood when I'm looking at iron absorption for a patient or iron levels for a patient. I look at the ferritin levels, and that's the iron in storage. Actually, this is a really good topic because iron in storage is described as ferritin in blood tests. So you always want to ask for iron studies, which shows your iron in the blood, transferrin levels, your saturation levels, and your ferritin storage in the liver. And if your ferritin level is low, I think that if it's anything less than 100, it's getting on the low side. The lab's reference ranges here, they suggest if it's lower than 50, sometimes lower than 20 or 30, then it's low. But I actually find that people are suffering quite obvious signs of iron deficiency if it's anywhere from 60 to 100, it can still show signs of low iron. However, at that level, it won't show anemia, which is your obvious fatigue and, you know, bruising and all sorts of other signs of anemia, dizziness, low blood pressure, etc. Because it controls your or affects your blood volume, which then affects your circulation, etc. Whereas low iron overall, iron, as I said, is required for your brain neurotransmitters and will impact your mood and your ability to sleep without enough of that and your energy all day long. Something like parasite is a really common sign or really common cause of iron deficiency because parasites specifically feed on the iron levels in your body. However, if you do find that you've got a malnutrition issue caused by a host, or sorry, a pathogen to the host, such as a parasite, then you'll find you might be deficient in many other nutrients as well. So vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, and we tend to become quite depressed without enough vitamin D, which is why some of the countries that don't have much sunlight will be affected by seasonal affective disorder, which is a type of depression. And vitamin D, interestingly enough, people assume that it is only made by the sun. However, that's not true. The sun is a catalyst to convert the nutrients or the ingredients that are required to make vitamin D into vitamin D. So vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. You need your fat sources from your diet to be able to produce vitamin D. So yeah, it can be something going on in the gut. It can be an imbalance in your diet, not enough fats, for instance. It can be low iron in your diet, and ferritin would be the marker that you're looking for. There are some cases, such as the gene called hemochromatosis gene, where your ferritin markers are actually too high, and that can cause liver damage or scarring to the liver, similar to cirrhosis of the liver. There was something that I'd heard quite a few years ago where they didn't know that hemochromatosis existed, and when someone would pass away of damage to the liver, they would say that they were a closet alcoholic when in fact they had hemochromatosis running through the family and they might not have been a drinker at all. So alcohol damage to the liver can mimic too high storage of iron in the liver, which is your ferritin levels being too high. And because it does damage the liver, it can in turn cause chronic fatigue, because the liver is an important organ for energy, as well as, so very high iron storage can cause the same symptom possibly as low iron storage.
It's fascinating.
So there's a lot of complexity in what you need to test for and what you want to look for. But once you get the testing done and you understand your biochemistry better, you can start to really pinpoint what it is that's going on in your body.
So that leads into my next question, which is how do we find out which ones we're deficient in? Is it an easy test? Is it easy to find that stuff out?
Well, there's a lot of ways of knowing what your nutritional levels are. There are your standard blood tests that you can get through your GP, which will test your B12 levels, your vitamin D levels, your folate levels, your iron studies. You can do urine iodine testing. The best test for that one is a loading test, in my opinion, because it tests how much you absorb of what you took of iodine. So it's one level up from your general iodine spot test, where you might take a urine sample at any given day with no thought as to whether you've had plenty of iodine or not in your diet. An iodine loading test is where you'll take an iodine tablet in the morning and then you'll collect your urine all day long. You'll take a sample of that, send it to the lab, and they'll be able to measure how much of the iodine you took you actually absorbed and your overall amount of iodine that you store in your body. So there are a lot of integrative pathology tests. Something like an organic acids test can also measure the urinary metabolites leftover of certain vitamins to give us an idea of how much vitamin we have in our system. There's red cell blood magnesium and zinc and all sorts of ways of measuring our biochemistry. Full blood count with electrolytes shows a lot of our minerals in there as well. So there's lots of different ways that we can test for nutrients, and pretty much around the world. I know I've got a lot of international patients and I have to very regularly check the tests that are available to people anywhere in the world. And there are some amazing tests out there that will show nutritional panels. So whether it's blood, whether it's urine, each individual vitamin has a different way of recognising what level you have.
I have a question around, and it may not fall into the right category, I'm hoping it does. Where does sodium fall?
So sodium is an electrolyte. So sodium can change. So sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, even iron in this instance, these will all respond to your fluid levels in your body. So your electrolytes are necessary to make the electrical potential on the border of every cell. So each cell has electrolytes that are responsible. Say sodium, potassium work together to open a channel which allows sodium into the cell and pushes it out of the cell. So this actually creates these sodium, potassium pumps are called our ATP pumps. So these produce our energy on a cellular level. And if we retain fluid from an immune response or from holding too much water because our thyroid is off, say, for instance, we're iodine and selenium deficient, our thyroid might become sluggish and then we'll start to retain fluid, and that can then dilute our sodium and potassium and other electrolytes that cause an impact or an electrical potential on the cell wall, immediately changing our energy. So we may become very sluggish and fatigued within a few minutes of eating a food we're intolerant to, if that makes us retain fluid. If you're suffering adrenal fatigue, you'll constantly retain fluid because your adrenal glands won't have the strength to pump the fluid around your body properly. If you're suffering with cardiac problems and your cardiovascular system's not pumping your blood around properly, you can pull with fluid around your ankles and in the lungs. And these are things that will have an impact on your electrolytes. So electrolytes are very, very important markers in blood testing, which is why we get it in our basic biochemistry of our blood. So in our standard testing, because it can indicate some serious conditions and some very obvious energy problems.
Yeah, because I've heard of high sodium causing disorientation. Is that something you've heard of before?
Well, high sodium will impact your cardiovascular system. So it will change your blood pressure. So our high sodium will cause high blood pressure generally.
And what generally causes high sodium?
Well, there are some people who will have a lot of sodium in their diet, but I tend to find also that that has to be coupled with a lot of carbohydrates for it to then be held in the body as much as it is. I personally, when I was eating keto, had a very high sodium diet without the carbohydrates, and that counteracted fluid retention. So if you consider you're retaining a lot of fluid, if you add more salt to that, it restores the sodium balance, and that then reduces the fluid retention. So the more fluid you retain from whatever reason you might retain fluid, whether it's a health problem or whether it's an allergy response, the more sodium you dilute. So if you then add salt back, which is what a lot of athletes do, you can actually balance that fluid retention and bring your energy production back to normal by adding salt. However, if you're not burning energy and you're not utilizing these things and you're having a very high carb diet, you can eventually store too much fluid and end up with high blood pressure with an impact on your cardiovascular health.
Once we've worked out what nutrients and vitamins we're lacking, once we've gone through all the testing and what we think or we know now is directly affecting our brain function, what's the next step? What do we need to do to make it right? Are there various types of supplementation, and are there specific ones that suit different deficiencies?
So generally, the first step that I will do when I'm seeing a patient is to test them for their brain neurotransmitter levels and see what they're low in. The very first thing that I will do with a patient in the first 2 weeks of seeing them is restore the nutrients that build the pathway for that particular brain chemical that they are low in. And guaranteed within 2 weeks, they're starting to feel better. The next step is to then find out if there's any other deficiencies that they have. So we'll order blood tests. We'll find out, are they iron deficient or is there too much iron from some other family trait? Are they iodine deficient? Is that affecting their thyroid, causing chronic problems with energy, which will then in turn affect the mood? Is there any organ dysfunction due to a certain vitamin being missing, such as osteoporosis or osteopenia, where calcium fluid retention chronically for many, many years can upset the calcium magnesium balance, causing bones to not be able to absorb those minerals properly, not because they're not getting it from their diet, but because they've been retaining fluid for many, many years. So for instance, someone who's been highly allergic for many years and they don't know it, so their symptoms might be subtle and might only just be affecting their energy. So, you know, they might just think that that's normal for them. However, in the long run, it may lead to calcium deficiency in the bones. So we want to review all systems of the body and ensure they're all working properly. And if an organ isn't working very well, you can see in the symptoms what's going on, and we can investigate that further and find out if there's a missing nutrient causing that. So we go through the process of identifying deficiencies. If we can see that the normal diet should be offering these nutrients, then we need to find out why is the body not absorbing it. So then we go, okay, is there food intolerance? Is there something missing in the diet? Is there a parasite? is there a bacteria that they're carrying that causes inflammation, causing malnutrition, malabsorption? Or is there a lacking beneficial bacteria such as E. coli, which we've spoken about? And E. coli is responsible for converting the protein you eat into the building blocks tyrosine, phenylalanine, tryptophan, folate, vitamin K, which is it's a fat-soluble vitamin, important for bones as well, and CoQ10 for energy. So if E. coli is missing, we can have malnutrition of those particular nutrients, which will immediately affect our brain neurotransmitter production and our hormone production. So we then go through the process of identifying what could be the possible cause if these nutrients are available to this person that they are not actually being able to convert them into building blocks. Once we go through that process, then we use supplements to restore the levels to a normal level. And once it's restored to a normal level, the diet alone, as long as the rest of the systems have been restored, should allow for that person to not need to stay on supplements long term. The only time that someone would then stay on a supplement is if they have a specific gene mutation that doesn't allow them to absorb that vitamin naturally from their food. So for instance, pyroluria, where you're born with an inability to absorb zinc and B6 properly. You still absorb it, however, you've got a product in your body that's utilizing it and stealing it basically from your brain neurotransmitter levels and other things, or the MTHFR gene, you know, which is an inability to absorb folate. There are many different gene mutations out there that will cause certain things, but those two seem to be the two most prominent.
I feel like we could talk about this all day, but that's all we have time for today's episode.
That's it for episode 5. In the next episode of the 7 Steps to Freedom from Anxiety, Depression and ADHD podcast series, Jodi will educate us with her knowledge of the cycle of stress and how stressing ourselves out really can affect our mental and emotional well-being. If you're enjoying this series, please support us by subscribing to all episodes. If while listening you've had something of a light bulb moment and have the urge to reach out to Jodi, you can contact her via her website, advancedwellness.com.au. And finally, if you're experiencing a personal crisis or are having dark thoughts, please reach out to one of the many services available, such as Lifeline. Lifeline's phone number is 131114.